Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you. Good morning, good morning. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here at the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Bermondsey. And as I've said before, with the COVID shutdown, safe distancing, I am recording from home, and you're hearing a broadcast of a conversation that I had with our guest yesterday. So today we're asking the question, if Black Lives Matter, it matters that people of the African diaspora are aware of certain time-honored traditions or customs that could benefit people here in Canada and globally. My guests are Lana Magambo, who is the co-founder of the Building Bridges with Rwanda, and Mama Colby, the Queen. And I'm going to ask each of them to introduce themselves in their own way to you, and then we will be talking about these customs. So Lama, would you like to start?
Thanks for having me, Charlotte. My name is Lama Mugabo. I'm the co-founder of Building Bridges with Rwanda, a nonprofit organization based here in Vancouver. And our mandate is to promote the interests of Rwanda, tell our audiences about the successes that Rwanda has had in the last 25 years since independence, since the genocide. And I'm glad to be here in this conversation, not only during Black History Month, but also remembering the decade of people of African descent.
Yes, we definitely do not isolate or intend to only speak about issues of people of the African diaspora during this month, but each and every month. And one of the things I said at the beginning of the year is my show, Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon, would each show illustrate or bring forth one of the principles of Kwanzaa. And so the principle of unity is definitely linked to this one today, as well as cooperative economics. So Queen Mama, introduce yourself.
Thank you, my sister. My name is Kombi Nanjala. They call me Mama Kombi. I call myself African Queen. And I'm proud to be called like that because people think that we are never people. And ourselves, we know who we are. I run an organization called Great Lakes Networking Societal BC, which I started back in 2008. And I came from Kenya, was born in Africa in Kenya. I came from Kenya with a history of helping the needy, where I had put together about 1 million kids from the streets of Nairobi. And that is how I developed love for giving, love for support, and love for shouting. I shout when there is no justice. I can go on the streets and like we did back in Nairobi, where Wangari Maathai went with women, us, to protect the forest. So it has been my pleasure. It has been my way of doing things. And I'm so happy to be here today to talk about what we go through, to talk about the joy, injustices, love, endurance, wounds, and scars, while we are thinking of our Black History Month. And to me, it's not supposed to be even a Black History Month. It's supposed to be a 365 days history, African history, which should be Canada's history. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. And you, as you know, if you just watch mainstream media and even in the schools, people really don't learn much about Africa as a continent and then of the different countries' customs. And so These two customs that we are going to be highlighting today are something that have had benefit. I interviewed Lama at another time when we were talking about COVID, and this custom of Umuganda is something that really helped with educating people. So would you share a bit more with us about the history and how that practice is carried out today?
Thank you. So the idea of Umuganda comes from our tradition, the ability to work and clean the environment and help develop the infrastructure. Now, this was practiced many years before Europeans arrived. It was also practiced up until 1994. But I think after the destruction of the genocide and the country was completely decimated, just imagine, in 100 days, 1 million people died. And then there was 2 million that left the country and went into exile. And then there was 1 million that came back after being outside as refugees for 37 years. The country was looted, national coffers were emptied, and so we started with a deficit. So how do you rebuild a society after 1 million people have died, after the country was completely on its knees? So we had to think really quickly, and what really helped us was inspiration from our tradition. So interventions like Umuganda, Ubudehe, Gachacha, all these things were practiced prior to contact with the European world. So Umuganda, what does it mean? Umuganda basically means collective work. And so how does it work? Every fourth Saturday of the month, everything comes to a standstill from 8 to 1 o'clock. People stay in their villages and they help clean up. They clean the environment. If someone's house caught fire or was needed repair, neighbors will get together and fix the house. But most importantly, they cut trees, they clean environment, they plant trees, and so as a result, Rwanda has become the cleanest country in Africa and Kigali the cleanest city on the continent. So this has paid off big time. Not only that we were able to build the society, but I think Umuganda also served as a social contact. So imagine you don't see your neighbors because you're working and going to school and you're busy, but on a Saturday morning, you get a chance to see your neighbors, to talk, to work together side by side. And usually the last hour is spent talking about government projects like family planning, like community policing, like healthcare for all. So people really get into it. And in the past 25 years, you can see the transformation of the country. But also the result of this Umuganda has been neighbors getting to know each other and also understanding complex issues like family planning. How do you do family planning in a country that has the highest density in Africa, in a country where average mother had 12 children, a country where your significance in society is based on how many children you have. And so all of a sudden, the government comes and says, look, you guys, you cannot continue to have that many children, because analysis shows that if your population is growing faster than economic development, all the gains you get go up in the air. So then the government had to find a way of helping people make the adjustment. Instead of having 10 children, have maybe 3. And that was a tough one, because remember, this is after the genocide. A million people had died. And people felt that they had to replenish, they have to have more babies and fix this deficit. And I remember one day, I had brought some visitors from Canada who were working with me. So I used to bring them to this Muganda to see how things are done. And then in the course of Muganda, the rain came and we huddled under a tree. And the person who was leading the workshop had just announced that the government wants people to reduce the birth rate and then make it to 3. And this woman was livid. She said, how dare them? How dare them ask me to have 3 children? I lost everyone in my family. My husband and I have been doing well and we want to replenish. This is not acceptable. And how do you explain that? So I said to her, with all due respect, thank you. My heart goes out to you. I'm sorry about your loss. But I tried to explain that maybe what the government means is that very often we don't think about what may happen to us in the future. So you and your husband are doing well, you're successful financially, but what, God forbid, if one of you was to, something to happen to them, if you lost your work, or if, what would happen to these children? So now she starts thinking and go, oh, okay. So anyways, I don't want to stay on too long. I just wanted to share with you some ideas in terms of how we use Muganda and the rewards that Muganda and other all these other policies have brought to Rwanda in its reconstruction and reconciliation process.
Yeah, I think it's quite a contrast where here all of the emphasis has been on what can the government do to help people with COVID and recovery. And that has the other approach of from the ground up, people helping each other. And it's something that everybody is going to want to do once we are able to stop the shutdown, get to meet their neighbors. So it would be good if people from your country who are here could teach people how to, just as you were talking about under the tree, mm-hmm. I think having this conversation, but bringing that into larger conversations when people have town hall meetings, the example of how Umuganda could be used to help people shake off the Zoom crazy, the COVID crazies, the depression, just the things that have happened and interrupted our patterns of working together to show that this is another approach that we could use since we've had to learn how to communicate with each other differently already.
Absolutely. I think that, one of the things we hope to do at BBR is to really begin to share what we have with our neighbors here in Canada in the hope that we can share our learnings and our experiences. Just like Rwandans have done whenever they go, say, to Haiti or to work as peacekeeping forces or to help reconstruction in different countries like South Sudan, they've brought these practices and they have been really well received. Because who doesn't want the environment clean? Who doesn't want to plant trees? Who doesn't want to build a garden, a vegetable garden? So all these things are processes that people can do from bottom up that builds the country, that strengthens social engagement and makes our quality of life, better.
And I think that's why it's such a great transition over to talking about Harambe, because I remember hearing about it when Jomo Kenyatta started it in the States at that time. Every November we were having Harambe events, but then it just kind of died away. But it hasn't died in Kenya. So can you tell us, Queen, more about Harambe?
Thank you, my sister. Thank you, Lama. I'll go back to Lama and just tell him, nice that he has brought Muganda up. The Muganda is also used in Kenya. Pretty African countries, we do same things. It's just like a brother just moved from here to this other place and is carrying with him what he left behind or what he collected from this other part. So Muganda in Kenya is, we have always said Kumukanda. So Kumukanda means today we have a meeting. And this meeting, we call it Kumukanda. And this Kumukanda can be for us to go and just do a merry-go-round. A merry-go-round in Africa will be, I have $5, I have 5 shillings, another five. We give one person. He has no school fees. He has somebody in the hospital. He has something to do, or he just, it's her or his turn to get that money. So we give, with Kumukanda, we give that 5 shillings. If we are 100 of us times five, we give this one person this week. And next week, we are coming again together and we collect another five shillings. We give to another second person. So 100 people, we shall do Mukanda 100 times because we have 100 people. And make sure each one of us is there attending. Each one of us is there giving the 5 shillings. And Mukanda is something also that can solve problems. Normally, like if what we see in Canada on land issues in Canada, it was done by the elders. It wasn't, it's not a force. It's done by the elders. And even the law in Kenya says anybody who wants to buy land from anywhere should consult with the elders of the area, because these are the people who have lived there, who know the history. So this Mukanda will be called and say, Kombi is coming closer here to buy a piece of land. Any objection? Anybody who knows that land has a problem? And the person who is going to sell the land, are you going to sell the land and you remain without a land? Has your family accepted? How many kids do you have? And if you're giving this piece of land, what is remaining for these people? So Muganda, like Lama said, it's something that we admire. The only difference that I see here, theirs is more sweet because it is a must that they must do it once every end month. Ours is us to plan when to do it, where to do it. On family planning, it was a tough one, like he said. We have lived with the, right now, if you go to the history in Uganda, we have a mother who has 43 children from one stomach, one womb. 43. I know it is so hard for her to feed these kids, but they also believe in the Bible, because the Bible was brought to us. They said, in that house that has children, the children will never die because of hunger. So if a woman like that, and you told her to go down and bring you 2 children or two, it's not. And in Africa also, our wealth depended so much on children, depended so much on cows, depended so much on what we own. So that is what we were, and that is what we have always been. So going back to Harambe is a word that was used in Kenya. And this Harambe means unity. And unity in which way? It is all pull together. Let's all pull together. So that is the meaning of Harambe. So I came to, we are divided in this city. We have those people from Caribbean, we have those people from America, and we have the Canadian who never know that there is something called Africa. And then we have those ones from the continent who are now the Africans. So me coming up with Harambe was for me to try and get these people come together. And my first event, 2015, was unity. Like I said, we are starting this and we are asking everybody to come. We want to pull together. We need unity among ourselves. And that is when I used that word Harambe. And then I just put Vancouver. So Harambe in Vancouver. So Harambe, instead of Harambe in Vancouver, I just called it Harambe Vancouver. And 2017, Harambe Kuva, working on diversity, multiculturalism, and reconciliation. We were the Georgia Strait and Daily Hives build our organization as the first ever organization to organize something like that. The first ever in Canada.
You know, you mentioned something about the Harambe being intergenerational. Could hear sometimes when there are events, sometimes people in one age group don't want to go. But you mentioned how people have a tune, a way that they play to let older people, to let people know that there's Harambe, that there's a gathering.
Yeah, pull together. Harambe is pulled, all pulled together. So it doesn't matter if it's a youth, is what, let's say we had, in, this is what we have used enough in Kenya. Let's say we are trying to it's a pole, electricity pole. It is so long, it's so tall, and one person can never, if we didn't have the machines to put it in that hole, we have darker hole, and we want to put that pole inside that hole. We shall put the rope at the end of it, but we have about 100 people, those pulling and those pushing those ropes to make sure that that tree, that pole goes to that hole. So that is the meaning. It doesn't matter whether you are old, it doesn't matter whether you are young, but that little energy you put on that, add it to mine and add it to his and to hers, that makes everything lighter.
Yeah, if I can add something there, it's actually interesting when you look at Umuganda and Harambe. They both rely on strength in numbers.
Yes.
And we have large populations in Africa. In Rwanda, it's obligatory. In Kenya, I think it's voluntary, right?
So
in
yes.
Rwanda, if you don't attend Umuganda, you can be fined. You know, and so it calls for the urgency to come and be out and help rebuild your society. Now, the strength in numbers or the ability to lift everyone by working together is really important because, as Kombi said, you have people looking at an issue. They all talk about the problem and they find the solution together and they solve it together. That's really powerful because at the end of that exercise, people then have ownership. They've done it. They did it together and it's pride. Yeah, so Harambe is really, let's pull together and let's do it together. It's beautiful, yeah.
Thinking
Harambe.
Oh, that brings us a call to hear Rita Marley sing a song with Harambe.
No, and even in Kenya, when we were doing the Harambe things, the music that came and we would sing Harambe, Harambe, tuimbe pamoja, Harambe, Harambe, tuimbe pamoja. Harambe, Harambe, tuimbe pamoja, tujenge serikali. So he's telling us through Harambe, let's sing together, let's stand together so that we can be able to build our government.
Yeah, country, yeah. Great. Yes.
And which connects also with something that's a part of African tradition that has been carried over and done in other places, but call and response, work songs, and the idea of as you are moving about the course of doing something, people are singing and that brings
easy.
It together. Yes.
Yeah, it makes it easy. You are enjoying, you are dancing,
yeah,
you are working, you are doing. Yeah.
And usually it brings the whole community, young and old, men and women, you know, everybody, it's
together.
Yeah, so after hearing that song by Rita Marley, I also noticed that that there were South African children singing this song, that some of the street musicians are using it. So it's lasting. I think that that is a thing that today there's so many trends and people will talk about trends, but the permanence of these two practices, I think, is something really worth sharing and in introducing. Right now in Canada, we have this problem, not only Canada, but other places where people are resisting wearing a mask. And so just as you saw intergenerationally expressing the need for birth control, I could see applying this concept of coming together, everybody pulling together and helping people understand why you need the mask and how it would benefit. And that word that you say, making a joint decision to follow a plan.
The problem also, the problem here that is in Canada is, it's the government that says it. In Africa, there are the people who say it. So when you put me and you start explaining the problem, then we can use the ideas that are coming from us than the ideas that somebody brought to us. That is the difference. So if we can sit together and say, this, the mask did not start today. It started long time ago when we had the first flu, and this is how they did it. And this is education is key. And putting those people on the decision-making table than you doing for me. How long are you going to give me a fish? If you are not ready to show me how to fish, then it becomes so hard. For me, I'm hungry, but I have to wait for you to have time to go and give me, get that fish for me. No, that is not how it works. Canada people have relaxed. They have relaxed, and because they have money, they have, the government gives them what they want. They don't have their, they don't use their thinking. They just, oh, the government is going to give us. But in Africa, because we don't have our unity, our coming together, our ideas are put together and it brings something that we all are part of and we belong at that point and it's ours. So that is the difference.
Absolutely. And in Rwanda, we have a habit of saying that the country's wealth is in the people's hands. So we don't, like you said, we don't have money to pay, but we have our physical ability
to do,
give. So by working on Saturday morning and cleaning the environment and building houses that fell apart and fixing what needs to be fixed with our hands, with our personal contribution, it adds value. At the end of the day, the government realized, oh my God, I did all this and I didn't pay a penny, and this is a contribution from the people. So I think it's that and education really showing by example and living it and passing on from generation to generation, I think that's going to make a difference.
Yeah. Lama, that is true. I remember when I was working in the slums of Madari, where I started this movement for the youth, for the children, I looked at them playing soccer, yes, and then they go back to the street and eat, and then tomorrow they're coming back to play. But I also wanted to look at, where do these children sleep? So that way I went to the slums, so all of us would go to the city of Nairobi and ask for wheelbarrows that will help us put all the cabbage on and go throw away. But in that process, we were able to identify the houses that are broken and that are down, and somebody is still living in those houses. So I would say to these children, you saw the house that we passed in that corner and it's down. Today we are going to make sure that we make that house stand. So these kids will come, we do the sewage, we clear the sewage, and we make that house stand. And the family that lives in that house gives us back, or if it was not for that group, the footballers, our house, we don't know how what would have happened. Lama, my clearing the sewage and my putting back those huts in the slums of Mathari gave my teams a ticket to be attending tournaments in Norway. Norwegian government and the Minister of Environment paid literally for us for about 20 years going to Norway to play soccer because of the environment we did in the slums. So it pays off.
Does for sure. I mean, and people see it, you know.
People see it.
Very often we do things with, who's going to notice, who's going to pay attention.
They do.
They do see the change. They see the transformation. I mean, look at Rwanda, for crying out loud. You know, 26 years ago, the country was on its knees, you know. But because of the work of Umuganda or Harambe or other interventions that we made, Rwanda is really an impressive example of what's possible for a country that doesn't have much natural resources. But the credit goes to the people of Rwanda and how they were able to lift themselves from the bottom up, you know. So
I think what you both discussed is a need to have a whole new approach to a study of social work in colleges. A lot of our audience is colleges. We're on Simon Fraser University as a college radio station. And never in any sociology classes have people used an example like that. We talk about the hierarchy of needs, but you recognize that if people were worried about, didn't have a place to sleep, they couldn't be concerned about the games or concerned about health teaching or other things that you were telling them about. So just by not going out of your way, but going to where the need was, then you got people interested into the thing that you were sent to teach. And I think that is a place where people who are studying to be in sociology, studying and just endeavoring to be in leadership and community, that what you've described is something, a really important principle to look at. And then, as you said, the government supported them going to Switzerland to play soccer for years because of what they accomplish.
Yeah.
Family is a very important thing, and we have heard both during the protest movement and people talking about trauma. I've introduced some young people and is discussing Black Lives Matter. A word that's very much resounding is intergenerational trauma. But I think the intergenerational trauma occurs more in the places out in the African diaspora where people of African descent have been dispersed into another system, because you were describing what family means, what the difference in people talking about their cousins or their stepchildren. What's the difference in the concept of family?
To me, I look at a family as the backbone. And in Africa, we believe in that child, me included, Lama, you, that we were raised by that village. It was not my mother. It was not my father. It was a village that raised me. Why do I say like that? If I went to school, I'm supposed to be in class by 8, and any parent met me running, going to school at 9, he will stop me and say, "What's your name?" "My name is Kombi." "Which school are you going to?" "I'm going to Mahanga." "Which class are you?" "Class 2. What is the time now?" "9. Why are you going to school at 9? I have to explain. I have to explain to this old man that I didn't know why I am going to school at 9. If he's not satisfied with me, he will get to the boundary there, get a stick. "Chapa, chapa, 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 you can't do this. What do you think you're doing?" And then he will let me run. "Run, I'm giving you 2 minutes. You have to be in class." I would run so fast. I have already been disciplined. So when I get to my teacher is going to discipline me. And you know what? I will never tell my father. I will never tell anybody. I know I was at wrong. That is why that man had to do that to me. Here, it can't happen. Here, you will die. You will die in jail if you try that.
So, Kombi, I think the downside of this is that very often when you're late,
yeah,
you're not late because you were lazy. You were
no.
late because you had to go fetch water, firewood.
That is it, yes.
So imagine this man runs, he sees you on the streets and he starts beating you up. You go to school, they beat you up too. Sometimes I think it's unfair for the children.
I just said, you are explaining why yeah. are you late?
Yeah.
He has asked you questions, why are you late? If he's like, yeah, you are late because you ran out, you went out to get this and that and that and that made you, okay, don't do that next time. Go run. So you are disciplined by a person who is not your relative. You are disciplined by a person who is not your mother, but he is from the village. Yeah. That is why they say in Africa, the child is raised by a village. So family to us is very important. If we had any kid who is going through a problem, he doesn't have to come to tell you that I'm going through problems.
Yeah. Yeah.
This kid, you will see the movement. You will see the way he's behaving. You will see the way he's acting. Then we shall call Barasa Muganda and say, the baby, this young man called John, we see his movement is not good. Either he needs something. Is there anybody who has seen this lately? So the elderly and even the young people will start saying, yeah, we see something different that is coming in John. You see something like that. That is a village. Before even if he's hiding from the family, the mother and the father, the neighbors out here have seen his movements, actions. And that is when they will now call the Mkanda and say, we have a problem. Let's come and see. This is a problem. And to us, a problem was not on, it was all over. If there was marriage, that there was a problem. There was some Uganda. So that Harambe is done to make sure this person gets what he needs to get to marry that girl. If it was death, we had to come together. We still have to come together to make sure we give the good burial to this person. Each one of us giving that little money. When it comes to birth, the baby was born in a family. We all come together and say, yeah, we have received a new guy here and we need to welcome him home. So everything in Africa is ours. It does not belong to him and his family. No, it's our problem. We are the family.
Now, growing up in the States, I grew up in Parsons in Kansas, which was close to the Oklahoma border. But I can remember as a child, there was a practice then among Black people in that neighborhood. Somebody at church would say, Jenny's nephew is coming up next week. We have to get clothes and things for them. And people would get clothes. They would help with a room. People would tell about jobs and help that person to get settled in. In fact, there was a 10-year period where millions of Black people moved from the South to the North and were absorbed into their families, given jobs, helped to figure out how to move, mix in, sharing information. And so in looking at, one of the things we're looking at with talking about customs across the African diaspora, if some things have died out or we've forgotten them, maybe just talking about them and sharing stories of how much different, what a difference it made in the community, that these are customs that may be resumed. You talked about something else, and it happens here. People come to visit. And when I was a child in Kansas, if somebody was coming up to visit from Mississippi, the children, we would get out of our beds. We would have quilts and be on the floor, and the company would get our bedrooms. So is there something, and you were saying there's something similar to that, and even how people describe their relatives?
In Africa, when a visitor comes, that day we are going to have to eat a chicken. So that is the first thing. So when we see you coming at our gate, we shall be jumping because we know today we are going to eat a beautiful meal, chicken, on the plates that nobody has ever touched. beautiful plates from the Gabon and the chicken food. And now, when it comes to sleeping, we can put together anywhere a big blanket, and all of us can lie on that blanket and cover another one. Sleeping in Africa is not an issue. Sleeping is love. And when we are sleeping like that, if there is an elder person, a grandma or grandfather, will now start telling us their story when they were growing up. And from that house, when these visitors go, they're carrying something with them from the wisdom from the owner of the house where they slept, and that love that these kids play together. And they keep on remembering that kid. It becomes now my brother. It's nothing like in Africa that is called cousin. We call each one my brother, my sister. As long as it's my auntie's daughter, son, uncle, all those are our sisters and our brothers. So that is how we strengthen the love, the relationship.
So do you offer the customs like that are maintained here in Canada?
In Canada, you will be put in cell.
Put in,
the Ministry of Children, and they will come and start say you are abusing, you are this, you are not able, you are. They will even want to come to the fridge, your fridge, to see what you are feeding that kid. It is so complicated, and if they were allowed people who come from this country to carry on what they have always carried on, you will never see an African kid on the street. You will never. If we put the elders together and looked at the problem this kid is going through, and looked at the kids who are having mental breakdown, they don't look at the journeys of these kids. They don't look at it. A kid who traveled from Rwanda on foot in the forest to another country and went and lived in a refugee camp for another 10 years before arriving here. The Canadian government does not look at that. They look at this individual as a 14-year-old. He has to go to this class. He's okay. They don't look at his travel history. They don't look at his journey. And when he does something small, he's mentally handicapped, give him that medication. He's in the police record.
So I think these are things that a lot of people aren't aware that families deal with. And then they flip it the other way around and say, people of African descent aren't involved with the meetings at the school, or they aren't involved with their children. And I think, we are going to explore something that's happening with the Ministry of Multiculturalism after we have this musical transition with Kof Brio. Well, tell me something about what you like about that song.
Which song?
Kof Brio.
Oh, Kof Brio. So Kof Brio is a song that was sung by a tribe in Nyanza province where the father to Obama comes from. They're called Luos. So this man is praising that we are Africans and we believe in wealthy. And our wealth are children, cows, land, and anything that we own. So he's telling the sun, the rain is coming, Kof Brio. The rain is coming. The rain is coming. Please bring back our wealthy. I am reminding you, look on at the top of your head. You will see the clouds. The rain is coming. Please bring back our wealth.
So that it's good to have a message like that that we can dance to, get up and shake to, but really let it encode, let it go within to understand that there are traditions, there are concepts of family that if they are honored and brought into the literature, brought into the stories that people hear on television, that there could be less of what's called intergenerational trauma and fewer Black children ending up in the system, as is very disturbingly, occurring in Canada and the United States.
True. We may feel that maybe it's in the system. It is the system. Just like you go to embassy, to all of those embassies, and they say, bring $500 so you can get a visa. They know they are not going to give you the visa, but I've taken your $5,000. And tomorrow you go, they will just, and then they will politely say, you can apply again after 1 month. So you are applying because they told you to apply after 1 month. You go back and apply one after 1 month. They say, oh, you were here last time. And we noticed that when you go to, when you're asking for visiting, you're not coming back. So we are not giving you. They've taken 10,000 from you. So that money is coming from an innocent person, yeah, who they would have just said, no, we can't give you, but they've taken the money. So when they're putting these children, our children, into the homes that even they deny the kids those, the customs, those history, the food, they're giving these people, who the white people who are taking care of our kids, money that is supposed to have come to ourselves, or that could have helped our children in another way, or family or the community in another way or another. So it's a system that has been put in place to really punish. We don't know, but it's something that the government has put there to really do what is happening today.
A couple of things here. I think we hear very often people talk about, oh, people are jumping the line. Oh, people are showing up at the border and asking for asylum. The reality is that if you try to go the official route,
nothing. You can't get.
You never get in.
So you will never get a visa. You can't.
When most people they get a visa to the U.S. and then cross the border and then declare themselves at the border.
Yeah.
And sometimes get in. Because also, I think it's against the Geneva Convention to turn someone away when they train you precisely that.
Yeah, they do it. They do it. They do it in a technical way. They do it in a very different, nice way to show that they are a welcoming country.
Yeah,
blah 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 blah. But we go through hell.
The other in the embassies of this world. The other point I wanted to make is here that we need strong organizations to help our people, because very often they get here and they fall through the cracks because of the systemic racism that is good. So that system, say for instance, if you're Chinese, you come here, well, there's success, and success has people who speak your language, who understand your culture, who can help you. But if you're Black, you really don't have many places to go, and so you fall through the cracks. Yet there's so much opportunity for newcomers, but you don't know how to connect, how to find out, how to access the services. So, yeah, I think what we hope to do is, and what I keep insisting is that as soon as the city gives us the MOU, Hoganzale will be able to have this title, and then we'd start building our community and empower our people to really do what we need to do for ourselves. So it's a
Lama, to add on that, when we come here, you say Chinese and us, it's different. Chinese are coming with money. We are coming with their ticket, and we reach here and we start paying that ticket.
It's a loan. Yeah.
It's a loan. We are coming here. We don't tell me how many Black people own the homes. This is something that the government should have done. How can we empower these people so they can have their own homes, the houses that they can call their homes? Who is thinking about that in this country, Canada? Who? So we struggle. You reach here as a refugee, you start paying the loan they gave you for coming. When are you going to settle? They're trying to take away your children because you did that, because you didn't buy them biscuits in the morning. You did not buy him or them good clothes to go to school. If your parents are not ready to take care of you, come. We can give you to a foster family. They've destroyed the Black community in Canada.
And it's interesting, the amounts of money that's paid to a foster parent instead of that money being made available to help a family,
the family
raising their children.
You are coming to pay the loan, the transport, the air ticket they gave you. When are you settled to take care of your own children? And you're calling yourself you're in a first world country?
The question I wanted to ask, excuse me, I will say as we go into this next segment, this is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C here at CJSF Radio 90.1. We are talking about something that obviously goes further than Black History Month. It is not my intent to only talk about these issues of the people of African descent experience in Canada, and also the strengths that we bring, but to also carry these conversations throughout the year. But this particular time, there's money been made available to some groups for festivals and events. And you mentioned that you did a Harambe event, and during July, there's about five different events with the Jamaican Association, West Indian Association, people of African descent. And people wonder, why don't they pull all their money together? And you experience something that shows that it's not because the people don't want to. Can you share a little bit about what happened with you trying to make a united event for Black History Month?
Yes, I did. We came together because the ministry that we applied to didn't come to us to tell us how much we were going to get. So, and we got the letters very late February when the month is already started. So we are planning everything without any cent. And so we quickly came together, four groups, Ghanaian Association, Great Lakes Networking Foundation, African Stages, and Canada Education Foundation. And when we told the ministry, this is what we are doing, they were upset. Why do you come together? Why? It's supposed to be separate events. So when will us honestly be supported so that we can work together, so that we are seen? We are trying to build ourselves. We want to come together. We are a person. We are a people. Why is everybody in the government and department trying to separate us? And it has looked so weird that somebody, instead of saying thank you for you coming together to make this history peaceful or good, we are just in a fight. So we don't know even the result that we are going to give, if it will be good, because already we have seen negativity in our planning already because of the people who gave us money. So this fight, and the money is coming from multiculturalism, racism, and discrimination. What does that mean? The same money that is coming from that department is the same money that is making these people who are giving us fight us. We apply money from Red Cross. 10 organizations, black-led, were all denied. What is it that we don't do right? That these people don't just come and say, make it right by doing this, or make it right by doing this. So we are still struggling. We live in fear. We don't know when we shall belong. And again, when you talk to somebody, oh, maybe you are just sensitive. Oh, maybe you are just, no.
So Lama, you were saying something that very much related to this need for organizations to come together. Do you see strong organizations coming together to address issues like this?
Well, there are organizations that are coming up for sure, but I think these organizations also need funding and support to build the capacity. Think about Combi, the work she's doing. Think about Hogan's Alley Society, the work I'm doing with building bridges with Rwanda. I think with the exception of Hogan's Alley, but these two other organizations are really grassroots. We're still building our capacity. We need funding, we need support, we need training. It's coming together, but also getting support. When people say, how can we help you? Well, we need capacity to build our ability to deliver. But the ideas are there, the structures are there, and I think we need...
Hello!
Can you share, like people, you know, this show is called Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon. What are some ways that people can get in touch with you? Starting with you, Lama, could you tell places that people could contact you?
Yes, for sure. Go to our website, Building Bridges with Wanda, or bigbrother.org. Definitely, we are looking for people who have ICT capacity, social media, and definitely that could help. Yeah, so definitely those skills are very much in need.
And just because the airways make things sound differently, can you spell the Building Bridges to Rwanda?
bbrwanda.org. So bbrwanda.org.
Okay, and
put in Google Building Bridges with Rwanda and the website will show up.
Okay, yeah, would you tell us how people could get in touch with you?
For me, I am looking for people to come and support. I feed the homeless and I am looking for any kind of support so that I can keep doing that. It's my passion, but also the situation that we face, there are people who really need, like those living with the chronic diseases, those that are on the street, and anybody who wants to reach us, we have a website. It's called Great Lakes Society.org. Great Lakes Society.org.
Thank you both so much for coming and being here. This is the beginning of an ongoing conversation. So we will continue and we will end with listening to Jerusalem. As you said, people are dancing to this song all around and just a way of anchoring the unity and love that is there between people of African descent to each other and across the road, across the hand, across the bridge to people of other nationalities and customs.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Talo.
See you again.
Thank you, Talo.
You're welcome.
So wami au kulana kilondoloze su hambinami dau yami ai kulana buso wami au kulana kilondoloze.
Hey, this is Charlotte Frail, your own Sister C, signing off with a day where we have discussed two customs occurring in two different African countries, Umuganda in Rwanda and Harambe in Kenya, something that we may consider as we are able to move about more freely as the COVID pandemic ebbs away. We can look at ways that we can change how we relate to each other, how we can do things that help, how we can do things systematically every once a month, once within a block, then maybe moving into a whole community, going to town hall meetings, not being apathetic as we move forward to have a world that works for all. I will see you again next week at 10. And as you know, it's always love time, poem time.
Love time. Poem time, love time, poem time, love time, poem time, time for words from heaven to shine, love time, poem time, time for words to pattern and rhyme, love time, poem time, time for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time, time for poems, poets and singers, time to untie all life's ringers. Poem time, love time. Time for you to reveal to me. Unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace. Rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words. Place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time. Poem time, love time. Love time, poem time. Times for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time. Time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time. Times for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time. Poem time, love time. Time for poems, poets, singers. Time to untie all life's ringers. Time for you to reveal to me. Unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace. Rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words. Place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time. Poem time, love time. Love time, poem time. Poem time, love time. Love